Kalamuana, my fellow exiles, Talkative Tribe back here with another episode of the Still Sane Podcast, and today our guest is Dreamcore, one of the original creators in the Path of Exile space that I collaborated with all the way back in 2023 about Path of Exile 2 and the future of Path of Exile 1. This was an excellent discussion about both games, mostly focused on Path of Exile 2, though. His thoughts on the game, the future of development from Grinding Gear Games, what he likes about the endgame, what he doesn't like, what things he'd like to see in the future, with a rapid-fire round of questions at the end. As always, timestamps are in the description below, so if you'd like to give the episode a watch, proceed forward, and make sure if you'd like to see future episodes of the Still Sane Podcast to like the video, subscribe to the channel, and share it with your fellow exiles. Without further ado, let's get to the chat with Dreamcore. Dream Dude, it has been quite a while since we've sat down together. I think the last time was just before the launch of Path of Exile 2. How have you been, man?
I've been good, dude. Yeah, I've been enjoying PoE2. I enjoyed a lot of PoE2. And now looking forward to the PoE1 event. All going good.
I can see that you're popping off with Legacy of Freesia Ascendancy theorycraft and speculations on builds and breaking them down. Do you have a favorite Path of Exile 1 new Ascendancy from the event yet?
I don't know if I have a favorite, because I just really like that they've just gone crazy with them, right? They've made some really interesting Ascendancies there, so I'm not sure if I have a favorite, but there's a lot of interesting options. Like, there's really something for everyone there. There's just a lot of stuff going on, so... Yeah. I think if you're one of those, you know, classic fans of PoE1 and you just love the theorycraft and stuff, this is just the event for you.
100%. And if you want to go big bonk in Melee, Behemoth is not for you, as I have learned. I was so keen on making a Cleave of Rage Behemoth that I saw everyone
that
saying...
That spells are disabled, man. That is so brutal. That is just absolutely brutal.
Berserk is a spell, all your auras are spell. Like, I did not realize that almost everything in PoE1 is a spell.
Yeah.
Ancestral Commander is what I'm going to go after watching.
Ancestral Commander looks really good. Really good.
Super fun, super tanky, and just a smooth run through the campaign. Because my goal is like 80 for the armor set, but I might push beyond it. Are you going to play Hardcore Solo Self-Found for the event?
I might play Hardcore Trade, because I believe a lot of streamers and that are playing Hardcore Trade. And usually what happens is when a bunch of them agree to play Hardcore Trade, a bunch of people who usually play Hardcore Self-Found come over and the league is like way more popular, right? So I think that'll be a pretty fun league.
That's right. And since we're on the topic of Hardcore, I think I see the light, okay? I had this challenge set out to play Hardcore Solo Self-Found through the campaign in Path of Exile 2. And dude, it has been a totally different experience for me, almost enlightening as I'm going through this and learn. I feel like I'm learning much more about the game and the mechanics and just progression of characters. Is this why you love Hardcore Solo Self-Found in PoE1, PoE2?
For me, in PoE1, it was always a case of I'm not happy with the state of defenses, or at least I wasn't back when I first started playing. And it always felt like building defenses just wasn't worth it, because it felt like if I had more damage, I could just kill things faster, therefore I could progress faster. And even if I died occasionally, I didn't really feel very punished, right? Even with that XP penalty. So having that like restriction of if you die, your character's actually, you know, gone, it really makes you feel happy about investing into defense.
Mm-hmm.
In PoE2, it's a little bit different because there's a lot of interesting restrictions they've already put on the game, like, you know, you losing the map boss and losing the, you know, just it, there's a lot of different things like resetting the boss, things like that. I mean, I haven't played Hardcore in PoE2 yet. I literally haven't even interacted with Hardcore. In PoE2, I've played a lot. I think I've played like 8 characters, all of them through the full campaign.
Wow.
I think the best part of PoE2 is the campaign by a massive margin. It's just the campaign is really, really good. And then obviously when you get into the Cruel campaign, the scaling starts to break down a bit, and then into mapping it's breaking down even further. But for me, I mean, I've been just doing so much testing of mechanics because I want to know how they work for myself, but I've also been doing a lot of mechanics guide writing over on Mobalytics. I've been writing a lot of their guides for, you know, how different mechanics work. So, yeah.
8 characters, dude. That's quite a few. Have you tested essentially all the classes at this point?
Pretty much, yeah. I've pretty much gone through all of the classes. Not every ascendancy, but I've been going through. I think I made like 3 titans at some point. I don't know. I'm not sure why I ended up with 3 titans. Just like basically just testing a bunch of different stuff, right? But I think, like, for example, I think my highest character is like level 91, and then I've got another at 88 and another at 86, and the rest of them are all around like 65-ish where the campaign finishes.
Mm-hmm.
I just didn't really enjoy the end game. Like, I don't really enjoy the place that it's in right now.
Yeah.
So I much prefer the campaign. The campaign is super enjoyable, so I just kept making characters, really kept re-rolling.
Yeah, so I guess that's a great point of discussion right now. So the end game itself and the current state that it's in. Obviously, lots of people have been talking about what they like, what they don't like. From your perspective, though, watching your videos, I haven't seen your full thoughts on it. Is it much along the same lines of what other people don't like about it? That being the speed and just the layout of the Atlas and how it's juiceable and everything? Or is there something else?
Yeah, so first of all, I think that, as I said, the game is incredible in Act 1 through 3, especially Act 1 is just an absolute masterpiece. They really knocked it out of the park with Act 1. It's so good. And then into Act 2, Act 2 is very good as well. I'm not a huge fan of the little like map device thing where you like travel to different places.
Yeah, the desert map.
But for example, there's some things in the acts that are just so good. Like when you first go to that Valley of the Titans area in Act 2, and there's those giant skeletons that fall on you, right? And they just deal so much damage, but it's done in the correct way where, like, they fall on you and you know that you shouldn't be getting hit by that, right? This giant thing falling on top of you, it deals insane damage, and it's done in the right way where, like, their actual original concept of having this big damage thing that comes in that you then need to react to, like, you get hit by it and you have a moment of being in danger of actually dying. That's like the thing they were going for. I even remember Rory talking about that at ExileCon.
Mm-hmm.
And I really felt that in the early acts, like Act 1, 2, 3.
Yep.
Then when you go to Krull, like the moment you go to Krull Act 1, the scaling starts to break down in a way that your character is a little bit too powerful and fast for the content. Yep. And I think this is actually a problem with... This won't be a problem when they bring out Act 4, 5, and 6, because those things would actually be designed for a character of that level. And what's really going on here is they've tweaked the damage and life and stuff of these monsters, right? But you got to remember that those monsters were designed to interact with a character that was potentially having no movement speed on their boots, right? It's Act 1. Like, some of these are from the early Act 1 zone, so all of their skills and different animations and things are interacting with a character that is very slow for Act 1. But as soon as you're in Act 4, it's not the case. You're just running through the content a bit too fast.
Yep.
And then when you get to maps, what happens is something else goes on with the scaling. So instead of it being... It's still fast, right? But suddenly, the monsters are dealing a little bit too much damage. And I'm especially referring there to, like, white monsters, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have these white monsters that just almost one-shot you or one-shot you, the same as, like, a rare would have in the act that you just came from.
Mm-hmm.
So that is, like... That's my biggest problem with it, is that it's, from a balancing perspective, it's just not there right now. I understand other people's problems with, like, the towers and stuff. Like, obviously, like, towers are just, they're a bit annoying to interact with because you have to find a good way to get to them, so then you can then juice the better maps, right? You need to basically expend the worst maps to get to them, and then you juice the good maps, right? But for me, it's definitely more of a scaling and balance problem. Like, I'm really not a fan of the state of defenses in the game right now. It's so one-dimensional. Okay. Like, you just build energy shield because it's better than everything else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's basically my take on it. Like, I love the campaign, and I think when they release Act 4 through 6, it's going to be... All of that problem is going to be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And Endgame is one of those things where, like, people have to remember, they did not put anywhere near enough time into Endgame. Like, it's like 3 months of work. It's just been sort of like rushed together.
Yeah.
Give it time, and I think they may even fully overhaul it. Right, I don't know if they're going to keep that system, because you got to remember that system like came out of nowhere. It was something that they rushed to do because they realized that they wanted Endgame to be a thing for the early access launch. So it might just be that they completely scrap it and start again with it. Who knows? But
right, it's, you know, Delve made for an overworld essentially and an infinitely scaling system. And I think Jonathan, you obviously can see when he talks about Delve how much that excites him. So I almost feel like he was the engineer of that. He was like, how about we just do Delve, but in the end game and see how that goes. So yeah, I think you're right. I think it could just be completely thrown out or just completely rebalanced. And I totally agree with you on the progression and the scaling of player speed and monster speed and the fact that an end game, it becomes a game of kill or be killed. And your one thing that you want to do is scale damage, unless you are, you know, super powerful with energy shield and evasion, which, to be fair, that's what I played. And I felt almost like I was too godly when I got to endgame because I had, you know, evasion, ton of energy shield. And then I had the invoker node where part of my evasion turns into armor. So I was super tanky and I was just killing everything. But yeah, I think it's all just an issue of balance scaling right now for all the different cases that you can have once you get to endgame. So it's just going to be a lot of iteration on that point. And I totally agree on the Acts 2, with 1 through 3 being really, really good, with Act 1 probably being the best balanced, probably because it's undergone the most testing. And then I do think the cruel difficulty was also something that was probably flung together, because the plan as soon as June was to have all 6 acts in the game, right? So I bet that they were thinking, okay, we already have most of the balance for 4, 5, 6. Like you said, the animations are different. The monsters are different. We're good to go here. And then they realized, well, we're not actually going to finish this. Let's just up the values for the monsters here and everything. But we still end up blasting through it. So, yeah, I think that's all going to change. So, oh, man, it's going to be good. Did you get the art book? I'm curious. Or no?
I haven't got the art book, no. That's not. Yeah, I've seen the art book because it was actually, when I went to the LA event, it was there on the desk so we could actually look through it. And that's amazing. Yeah, I mean, I love all that sort of stuff. I do love the concept art of the game. I think it's incredible.
I know. No spoilers, but man, Act 5, I don't know if you saw Act 5, because that's the only one that they had up to. They didn't have Act 6. I cannot wait to see all that stuff in game. Oh my gosh. It's going to be good.
It's going to be great.
Yeah. Okay, so of your 8 or so character builds that you found in PoE 2, which is the jankiest and which one do you think plays the best? I'm curious your perspective on this. You said you made 3 Titans. That has to be because you thought Titans were just so cool, right, Dream? Right?
That's because none of them were melee.
Yeah, grenade? Okay, so I know your grenade.
One was grenade, yeah. So yeah. The most janky build that I made was a Warbringer, which got fixed like 5 days after I made it. It was there was an interaction with armor explosion support where you could explode the armor of like interactable objects like ice walls and shield wall and stuff like that. So it was basically just you would use Glacial Bolt to fire out a crossbow bolt, which then created ice walls. And then you would just fire the same bolt into those ice walls and all of them would just chain explode with armor explosion, which was that was very jank. It was like, I mean, it was a masterpiece, but it was jank, right? It was extremely jank. In terms of which one plays best, I did really enjoy I did a test. I'm not sure if you saw that video. I did a test where I went into the end game with 0 resistances because I was playing with the unique helmet, the Veil of the Night, which gives you 50% increased maximum life. So That modifier is not really a meme, right? 50% increased maximum life is ridiculous in PoE2 because you just can't get that stat very much. But that was actually it was a fun build because it's like I'm running through maps and I do really enjoy the playstyle of Corrupting Cry. It's very sort of, it's almost like RF type playstyle where you're just sort of like running along. You don't really get slowed down too much by using your war cry.
Right.
But that was so funny because whenever you come up against particular like elemental type monsters, you just suddenly take like 7,000 damage. I had a huge amount of life. I had like 9,000 life at the end there, but you just get absolutely chunked because you have no res. So that was pretty funny. But yeah, I mean, I played a lot of different builds. overall, but I think, and there is quite a lot. There's a lot of different things you can do, but it always kind of feels like you end up gravitating towards that one type of build aspect. Like, for example, stacking energy shield, right? Because you just feel like it's a wasted investment doing anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of how a lot of the builds went in the end.
Herald of Ice, Herald of Thunder, Hoa.
Yeah.
Man, yeah. I can't believe I waited so long to get a Hoa for my attack build. That was the crazy, literally like 180 Exalted Orbs, and I doubled my damage. And suddenly I'm like, oh, I can conquer the world, dude. It felt really good.
Item's crazy.
That item is crazy. Oh my god!
The fact that that's a pair of gloves is absolutely baffling to me, because the item, you know, in POE1 is balanced around being a weapon, right? That's the whole idea of it, is that it is your weapon. You have to make that choice. You use the weapon, you start stack, and you can end up with a lot of damage. But it being gloves is just incredible. That is a wild choice from them to do that.
Wonder if they're going to swap around how it drops on Zeshed, maybe make it the tier 4 drop, lower the drop chance a little bit, because it is very commonly available and people just spam corrupt it trying to get that extra 1.25. Oh, I helped my dad buy a pair last night, and when he got it, he's doing a Herald of Ice build, Ice Strike. He started melting everything, and he was just like, oh, this power, it's incredible. I love it.
Yeah, it's just
so good.
It's crazy.
Yeah, when you get your hands on it. Ooh. So level 91, this would be around that level. I'm curious though, did you do a full gambit of doing all the citadels and trying Arbiter of Ash, or were you,
no,
you just
I have, so I've so the one character that I got to 91 was the Grenade Titan.
Yep.
And I played that to, I want to say I played it to like 89 or something, and then I rerolled like six characters and then went back to it and played it for a couple of levels after they made that change, right, where you could see citadels in the fog.
Yep.
Like that with the beam that comes up.
Yes.
So that was when I came back to it, and I think I found like two citadels, but at that point I was very burned out on the game because I'd just been playing way too much of it. So yeah. And I also just wasn't really enjoying the end game too much. So I think I just didn't really want to pursue it.
I get that. I with those citadels, that whole system, I must be a very simple man, because my neurotic activates every time I see one of those beams. I'm like, oh, I got to get that citadel. Oh, I got to get that citadel. Another arbiter chance, especially the Jamanra citadel, because that is easy profit. Dude, the Jamanra fragments are, I think it's 600 exalted orbs right now per fragment. All right. And
that's
you can juice it to get, I got 3 Jamanra fragments from 1 Jamanra last night. So I just made an easy 1800 exalted orbs, which is just crazy. I mean, it's so, okay. So here's a little thought that people might not realize when they play Path of Exile 2 for the first time. Your second character, like in a run through, oh my gosh, the quality of life and the power you have on that character is insane. Like imagine being able to slam every rare item you get to 6 mods, because you can essentially do that if you play something in the end game. And that power spike is wild. Did you feel that at all when you play your subsequent characters? Like it's just such
it's
more stuck than POE1. Like the twink effect?
Yeah, it is. It is crazy. Yeah. The second character that I made was just the first one. I remember I was just like, man, I hit, because I was just steamrolling Act 1 because I played Warrior on my first character, and I was I got like a really good weapon in like the second zone or the third zone. I was just absolutely like every single boss was just dying in like 5 seconds, right, or something.
Yep.
And then suddenly I reached like the end of Act 1 into Act 2, and I just hit a brick wall with like how much damage I was dealing. And I remember like playing the Warrior again like 3 or 4 characters later when I rerolled, and I was like, what's going on here? It's just so smooth like all the way through. And I think part of it is actually also that like learning curve of you now know like not only where to go, but you know like what monsters do a little bit more. You start to sort of get like wired in into like what is this monster going to do, what's that one going to do, and you're like, you're also not spending as much time doing some things because you know that you don't have to do them, right? And it's like you just feel a lot more efficient in your second or third playthrough.
Yeah, I spoke with Cyclone last podcast about basically efficiently running the campaign and how he's really trying to optimize the way he's running the PoE2 campaign, and he thinks it's kind of a slog right now, like it's very tedious. My argument is still, Man, you've played Pee-wee 1's campaign for like a decade plus. That is why Pee-wee 1's campaign does not feel tedious like Pee-wee 2's. Like, this is your, even if you played through the Pee-wee 2 campaign like 10 times in the last 2 months, right? If you iteratively play it over 10 years, it's going to completely transform your perspective of it because it's going to become second nature. Anything you do for 10 years, I swear, will become second nature. And I already feel that when I'm playing through it, like on hardcore, right? Everything.
Yeah,
just...
I have to say, I don't find the campaign tedious at all. I find it easily the most fun part of the game right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even close.
Fun. Yeah, it's quite fun. And okay, so I also have to ask about something. So I looked at our last chat, looked at the highlights of it right before PB2 came out. There was a heated debate over default attack, auto attacks in Path of Exile 2 being supported by gems. So I'm curious, man. Okay, it's been out for 2.5 months. Obviously, if you played a warrior, I mean, you're going to use auto attacks at the start of the game quite a bit. What are your thoughts on the whole default attack being supportable debacle? Are you still in the camp of screw this, this should never be in the game, or it's like, it's not as bad as I thought it was?
So it being supportable is fine.
Okay.
But right now they are so imbalanced. Like, mace auto attack is just better than every other skill. Like, it doesn't make any sense that it's like that, because the mace auto attack costs no mana and every other skill costs mana and has like a ridiculous wind up time. Like, you must have seen the amount of builds people were making with just mace auto strike.
I saw
like
elk.
Like, I remember watching this Ben build, right? Ben is just like he literally was just walking around the map, and then he had the double herald set up, right? And all he would do is just like walk up to a pack and just use mace auto attack, and then just like the whole screen would explode. Then he'd just walk up to the next pack, mace auto attack. And it's just like, oh man. And it's also, it's the same with crossbow auto attack. I don't know if you saw that. Like, I remember watching Paustron level. I think it was like his third character or something. Paustron also done a bunch of rerolling, by the way.
Yeah.
And he leveled like his third character, he was leveling with a crossbow. And he realized very early on that the crossbow auto attack is so insanely crazy compared to everything else that you can be using. It's just, you just are absolutely mowing down everything. Like, yeah, you can use a skill to occasionally clear some trash mobs, right?
Right.
But like bosses or any kind of like large monsters, you just spam auto attack on them because they're just, it's dealing so much damage.
Dude, that's definitely a
balance thing, yeah, for sure.
It is. I'm doing it right now. I'm really curious to see what they do about it, because it 100%, especially if you're using maces, best feeling skill, in my opinion. It's the most mobile skill. It seems to do the most damage. It doesn't have the wind up, so it's like easier to maneuver around enemies and the like. I just did the Mastodon and the Spellcaster boss on my warrior. I literally just auto attacked them down. The only time I used a different skill was Bone Shatter for the heavy stun. That's it. And then just auto attack. And I'm stacking attack speed, so I'm just zooming like this, just like that, just the entire time.
That is literally the thing to do as well. Like, that's not incorrect. That is just what you do, because that's the best thing that you have available to you.
I feel so like
that's definitely a problem.
I feel like they don't want that. But I remember speaking to some devs around launch, and they told me like, oh yeah, people haven't realized how powerful auto attacks are on warrior. And I was thinking, is that what you want to be doing? Like, you want to be using these cool, flashy, or supposedly flashy skills that can scale tremendously, not just going, you know, left, right, left, right, over and over, right?
I think they've missed something there, because in Pee-wee 1, it's so punishing if you run out of mana and you can't use your skills. And that is actually something that I think is important, because they've pushed the whole idea of, like, mana costs being a thing that you have to fix, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that, if it's the case that auto attack is that powerful and it also costs no mana, so you don't have to solve any kind of mana cost, then that is just a problem in and of itself, because it means that you don't really look at the other options, because there's not really that much point in doing it.
Right. You know, the monk with the quarterstaff, I feel like over time, maybe 2-3 years, people will start doing this properly and saying quarterstaff and not monk when they're talking about quarterstaffs and everything. Because people still say like, oh yeah, the monk skills. But it's not
Monk skill, right? Yeah.
People are going to, I feel like that's a funny little trap that Grinding Gear Games has themselves in. But anyway, like the monk, the court buffs. Yeah, I just did it again. The quarterstaff skills, Ice Strike and Tempest Flurry, those are essentially auto attacks done in a cool way, I guess. Like, one has the built-in walking mobility and the cool combo. Ice Strike, you teleport around. I don't know how, because that's the Quarterstaff's identity, I feel like. That sort of mobility and being able to do those combos. Can you do something like that with a mace, right? Or is that removing what they're trying to do with the mace, with the big windups, the big hits?
I think there should be a bit of a balance between the two.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't feel right that auto attack locks you in place on mace. I think you should be able to move while you're using it.
Yeah.
But there should also be abilities that do lock you in place. So they did get that right. Like, having some of them lock you in place and have a big windup is fine. But you also need access to those other ones as well that sort of don't do that. And it does feel like mace has a bit too much going one way. It's like, yeah, you're carrying this giant mace, and I get that it's meant to be heavy and stuff, but it's just a bit too much.
Yeah, I'm wondering, I was looking at Huntress footage because she might be upcoming in Point 2. Everybody's speculating that from 2021. Man, it looked really good back in 2021, the mobility on the spear skills and the like. I can only imagine how it's going to feel with WASD and the more freedom of movement. I just imagine everything's built in to move with the Huntress, given her whole shtick is mobility. Like, and I can't see that not happening with all the upcoming classes, with the Marauder and Axes and the Sword and Duelist, all these things. I feel like they're going to have built-in mobility, which just means that the mace is just, I mean, it's just, it's busted
it's
in a bad
in
way.
Dirt.
You got to be able to move
it's
in
just
this
left
game.
In the dirt, dude.
You do. Like, okay, Arbiter of Ash. Have you seen the boss fight for Arbiter of Ash?
Yeah. I've seen all the boss fights, yeah.
Oh, you have? Okay, so let me guess. Did you watch the Quinn attempt of it?
Yep.
Oh, so glory. That is the way, okay? I love, dude. That is the way to do it. God, that is, I wasn't able to do it because I watched his attempt. If I hadn't have watched his attempt, I would have gone in blind. But I saw him and I saw, like, oh, you know, I'm basically never going to reach Arbiter because it's pure RNG. And I found one Citadel at that point, and that was right before they did the patch and everything to show the beams. And I had 12 beams or something in the darkness. But I watched his attempt. Oh my gosh, such a god gamer. I can't believe you spend all that time, you go into a fight like that blind and it has multiple one shots.
That's so funny. Yeah, I love it.
That's so good.
Watching Quinn do anything like that is just so funny.
Oh god, what an end. And then it was in the documentary. That was peak. So peak. Okay. Anyway, you got to be mobile in these fights. Holy crap. I can't imagine being a warrior. Dude.
It's crazy.
If you Sunder and your build up for Sunder is like 3 seconds because it has all the stacking damage mods and everything. So you have to perfectly time when you're going to do this. Otherwise, the Arbiter is going to kick your ass, or you're just going to have to dodge out of your Sunder and not get the damage going. Right? Like, oh.
Well, this is the thing. And then it kind of feels like that. It's balanced around, so one, that auto attack is very fast. If you scale attack speed, it goes off very quickly, right, compared to the other attacks that have, like, the fixed attack time. Right. And it also feels like it's kind of balanced around the existence of Hammer of the Gods, which is a skill that I'm really not convinced should be in the game. Because it's one of those things, like, this is... So I actually didn't think about this until Captain Lance brought this up in a video, where he was discussing skills like Hammer of the Gods are a bit problematic, where... It doesn't matter what main ability you're using, right? Let's say you're using, Sunder or something like that. That's your main ability. Or you're using Molten Blast or something like that, like the projectile skill. It doesn't really matter which skill you're using. You're always going to have a link for Hammer of the Gods, because why wouldn't you? It's a cooldown-based ability. It deals a huge amount of damage. You're just going to socket some gems in there, and you're going to use it on a boss, because basically, you're making a mistake by not doing that. You have the sockets to do it. And that's actually one of the really interesting downsides, in my opinion, it's a downside, of the gem system, which is otherwise a massive upgrade to PoE1 system, in my opinion. But the downside is that because you have so many of those sockets, you know, those link setups that you can use, anytime there is a skill like that, you are just going to use it. So every build... Every mace build, doesn't matter what other skills they're using, they are going to be using Hammer of the Gods. It's a mistake not to use it.
Yeah, it's a problem that I wonder if in their minds will only exist for as long as there is a limited number of gems in the game. I'm thinking this is obviously super long term, and this might be massive copium. 3 years from now, when every league they're adding like one new skill for each weapon. And we get to a point where, like, Mace has freaking... Do you think that that'll happen? Where Mace will have, like, 50 skills? How the hell are they going to add new skills to this game, man? Given the current... Like, it's going to be a... It's going to be tough to balance, right?
I'd expect they'll add some new skills, but I also think that they'll take on that transfigured system from PoE1. Because it's just so? It's a very good system to utilize. Mm. It's like... I think they realized with that system that they could reuse a skill that already exists, use all of its animations and everything like that, and then they can just, like, change some numbers, maybe add some like new thing in there that slightly alters how that actually interacts with monsters or interacts with the character or whatever, right? So that's yeah. like a from a design perspective for them, it's a lot less time consuming to create transfigured gems.
Right.
Than have to like create a whole new animation of something new, you know, and like design something entirely new.
Right. I wonder if that, but you're so right. That's going to be a problem. I think it is a problem of you are always going to use, you know, Hammer of the Gods or if Archmage stays the way it is, you're always going to use Archmage, right? To scale
Archmage
spells.
Is crazy, dude. Like,
I mean, there's those things that you're always going to put into your build with the way the gem system works. So I can't
like Archmage and Hauer, those two things. Like they're just Justin. They're a mathematical error. I don't understand how those things make it into the game. Like they're just Archmage is ridiculous. You can just look at that and see like a character with like 2,000 mana gets way too much extra damage from that. Way too much.
Yeah. It's a
you know, and that's 2,000 mana. You get way more than that.
Now here's another, I know it's kind of a controversial topic that's probably been done to death, but GGG has decided to not do mid-league balance updates because the people got too upset and people didn't want builds to change. Okay, which I wonder if a little bit was kind of not fabricated but blown out of proportion, right? With very vocal voices on social media and everything. Do you agree with their approach to do this, especially if the cycles or leagues last 3 to 4 months and there are going to be these huge outliers that everybody moves toward, like Herald of Ice, Herald of Thunder, everyone does Hoa, everyone does Archmage and the like. Do you think that they should be balancing those, or are you on the approach of, you know, it's in the league, let's let it go, even though it's early access?
I think from a business perspective, I think it makes more sense for them to do the way they're doing with a sort of large league style release every quarter, right? Or whatever it ends up being. But I really do think it should be done the other way, because I think that like early access should be, they should lay the groundwork very early on in early access that the players expect that anything can change at any moment. Right. That is something that should be laid down as the groundwork. Everybody who's playing the game knows that if they're playing a broken build, they may wake up in the morning and their build's dead, because that's just how early access should always be treated, because that's how you can very rapidly improve the quality of the game in a way that you kind of react to feedback. And obviously they need to have like internal discussions and things. It's not like you just knee-jerk reaction to those feedback that comes in, right? But you change things as and when it's absolutely necessary. If it breaks someone's build, it's obviously going to be something that's very broken. Like, for example, Archmage. Like, if they nerfed Archmage, it wouldn't break those builds. Those builds would still be good. Mm-hmm. They just wouldn't be completely ridiculous like they are right now. And it's the same with Hauer.
Yeah.
The gloves, right? They could nerf that modifier by 60%, and those builds would still be dealing way too much damage.
Yep.
So those things, I really do think that they should have done that, made that very clear early on. And I actually think when I'm sure, maybe I'm misremembering this. I mean, you know more than I do with like the interviews and stuff. I'm sure they actually said at one point that they're going to be making very rapid, fast changes during early access.
They did.
And that just ended up not really being a thing. Like they did some patches early on, which fixed some things. There were some problems, like bugs, some crashes, things like that. But man, like, they should be just, this should be like a canvas, essentially. Like, if something's broken, just fix it.
Yeah. So you touched on an excellent point at the end and near the beginning. At the beginning, you said, them fixing problems is going to get the game into a better state faster. So true. And I think I see some people in the chat are saying, well, if they nerf my build, I won't want to log in. I'm an average player. I don't have a lot of time. I totally understand your POV. I think I'd be in the same camp as you, especially with my Hoa build. Rip Hoa. I'd be dealing no damage, Dreamcore. I'd be screwed. But it'll get the game into a better state so much faster. Because of this approach to balancing, they might make a whole bunch of changes at the end of February or mid-March, and there still might be a whole bunch of broken stuff that they did not anticipate. And because they can't address those 1 week into the patch, they have said now, okay, we're going to wait until June to make the next balance changes. Well, then there's probably going to be a whole swath of broken things there. And it's going to extend the runtime of early access because they're not able to address these things. Or they're addressing them internally. And then, you know, a design change might shift how it actually works and they don't remember it. Like, it's so many different moving parts. And all this is going to do is extend the runtime of the early access period and make sure the game is in a more broken state longer.
Which okay, I how think long sucks. Is early access going to be? What's your take on this? Because the initial thing was 6 to 12 months, right? That's what Jonathan said happening. He expected it to be.
Yeah, literally a month before launch. No, 1.5 to 2 years is my guess. 2 years is my, I think 2 years. I think December 2026.
I think 2 years is like an absolute minimum.
Yeah, I think December 2026 is when it will launch in the early access. That's my big prediction now after seeing the way that they're approaching this.
Yeah, because you're totally right. This is what I'm actually really worried about. So, like, I'm excited for 0.2. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and I'll have a lot of fun with that patch, no matter what happens, right? Because they're going to kind of bundle these changes in that we've been expecting that they're going to bring to the game. But you just touched on it there, where, like, that patch comes out, and someone like me and a bunch of other people, you know, who, like, build Theorycraft and stuff, you're going to immediately recognize that, oh, like, this thing is just as broken as Energy Shield was last patch. Like, it might be that they suddenly make it so you can stack too much life and Energy Shield is dead, right? Like, they could just go too much the other way, but they don't have that feedback, that constant feedback loop there mm-hmm. that they can, like, they can completely abuse that to their advantage. Mm-hmm. They've got they've got so many people logging in. Look all through Christmas how many people were logging in, right? Like, even into January, so many people playing the game. And you can just use that to, like I said, improve the game faster. You can just get to that better state faster. But now I'm going to get this 0.2 patch and I'm going to look at it and I'm going to be like, well, this thing is just completely out of tune now. And now they're not going to fix it for 4 months or 3 months or however long it's going to be.
Right.
So,
and at the end of your statement, you said, like, they did say in interviews they will be making changes pretty rapidly. Okay. And not necessarily new content or anything, but adjusting skills and the like.
That's what I expected. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. They said that very soon before launch, and in their state of early access post that they released a few weeks back now that kind of recapped what they had done, they, in writing, so official from Grinding Gear Games, not Jonathan Rogers on a podcast or anything offhanded, in writing, they were like, you know, we were making lots of balance changes. People did not like that, so we're going to hold off, and we're not going to do that anymore. So I'm sure you saw, like, you know, people melting down. I think obviously just blowing things a little bit out of proportion on, like, Twitter and Reddit with, like, the cock nerfs and the cast on freeze nerfs and everything. I think they saw that, and they probably also saw player numbers dip, and they were like, we don't want this type of outrage or anything, so we're just not going to make the changes. I think that's what they're doing, and they're doing the best thing for the in-the-moment business, but I feel like in the long term, like we've been saying, it's just going to make sure early access lasts way longer, and there's just going to be broken stuff and setting poor expectations for players for, like, 3-4 month leaks. Like, that sort of broken stuff. When PoE2 launches, ideally, most of the obviously out-of-whack stuff aren't going to exist. There's going to be broken builds. There always is in Path of Exile, but it's not going to be, you know, I'm clicking Spark once and I delete Zarak, or I delete the Arbiter of Ash, right? Like, that, which is crazy that happens, you know? So it's just going to, that's what I'm most worried about, is setting up people's expectations poorly. Like, my friends, they're playing the Herald of Ice, Herald of Thunder, bouncing, plus the shatters with that ring, that unique ring by Strike.
Yep.
They one tap and it cascades across the entire screen. And they're like, oh, yeah, I'm going to always have this. And I'm like, bro, You're not. Yeah,
that. So that's actually one of the really big things. And I remember that the video that Ben made, where he
was totally
that was
right.
one of the things that, that's one of the things that he discussed, right? Where he said that like the longer you leave these things in the game, the more people come accustomed to it, and they expect that to be always there yes. for them.
Yep.
And I think okay that the Ben video, I think he made a lot of good points. You do have to kind of remember that Ben is like he's so much more efficient than like the average player. It's ridiculous, right? So the like any kind of content or whatever that's in the game, he's going to blast through it way faster than anybody else. Mm-hmm. So some of the points that he, even though I think I agree with pretty much all the points that he made, but you have to remember that the analysis that he had there is that he's actually blasted through the content and actually got to that point where he can kind of make that decision of how these things, how he feels like these things are. And a lot of people will not have actually got to that point, and they may not ever get there, right? Like there'll be people that log into POE2 and they may not ever actually get to that point to experience that issue. And so they can't, they're not going to like look at that and see the video in the same light, right? And see those exactly. criticisms in the same light. And one thing that really, really did annoy me with the whole sort of POE1, POE2 thing yeah. is...
Go in, DreamCore. Let's talk.
Man, it's just, I don't know, like, I had, so, I'm not really sitting on any side of the fence, right? Like, I think that POE2 is going to be such a good game in years to come. It's going to be the best ARPG. I can see that from a mile off, right? They've got the groundwork there for it to be so right. good. I just hate the way all this thing has, like, split the player base in two
Me
halves.
Me too, dude.
Like, I make a video, like, the first video that I made on POE1 in, like, 2 months, right? And I had like several people commenting like they should be working on POE2. This is a waste of time. They yep. should be doing this, doing that. And then like I get the same comments on my POE2 videos talking about how they should be working on POE1. I'm like I get it from both sides. Like I really do.
Yeah.
I really do, because you've got to remember that there's a lot of new players that only play POE2. There's a lot of old players that have invested a lot of money into supporter packs and stuff to help them build the game, right? And they love the game. So yeah. you've got to see it from both sides. But I think ultimately, you got to take a step back, right? Take a step back and look at what's happened. And you got to look at it and you got to think, right, this was clearly mismanaged from GGG. Yeah. Everyone can see that. They've clearly mismanaged it. I think that the turnaround on the event is pretty incredible. Like they've sprang into action. They're like just putting this event out of nowhere. And people are hyped for it, man. So
it's
like,
crazy.
Yeah, this isn't 3.26, and yeah, they mismanaged that stuff. But I think people are going to love this event. I think they're going to have a lot of fun in it. And it's like, yeah, the POE2 stuff will come as well. You know, they're clearly they have their focus on POE2, and I think that's the correct thing to do. I think everybody, even people who there'll be people who like can see that POE2 is going to be good eventually, right? They may not enjoy it at the moment, but they kind of realize that this is like, look how many copies the game sold in early access, right?
Chris.
Obviously, they're going to be focusing on that game. Like, you can't really say that they're wrong to do that, right? But yes, it was mismanaged taking all of the team off of POE1. But
it was mismanaged, and given so the crazy thing to me is when I think Jonathan released that video, he said, "Yeah, we can't take our most senior people off POE2 to work on POE1 during this time. Like, we need their focus on POE2. That was his thought. I wonder if the few people managing POE1 have been like Mark and some of the most senior devs at Grindr Games. And that's why a lot of the leagues, even though they have so few people working on them, they're like, you know, crazy in terms of giving us new builds to try, and the mechanics are wild and way more than we would expect from these POE1 leagues. With even Acropolis, I thought was a big dud in terms of league mechanic. It was a lot added to the game. Same with Settlers of Kalgur and Affliction and all that stuff. So I feel like a few of them got into a room and were like, okay, what's one of the craziest low effort things we can do? Oh yeah, Ascendancies, the biggest build defining thing in the game. We can just insert all this crazy stuff.
Exactly. And also, I was trying to tell, like, in one of the videos I made, I actually, like, a lot of people called me out on this. I was like, this is very low effort for them. Like, I can't actually explain that. So, one, they haven't done any art for the Ascendancies, right? Which is fine. I'm not expecting art. I don't need that, right? Mm-hmm. But the thing you got to realize about the Ascendancies is all of these modifiers are things that already exist in the game. They all already work. They know they work. So they're not going to create any kind of ridiculous problems for them. Yes, there's going to be broken builds, but they don't really care about that. So yes, this is quite low effort for them to be able to do this. But I mean, you and I know, especially in content creation, right, is that effort doesn't always result in something being extremely popular or whatever, right?
Nope.
And this thing is going to be popular, this event. People are going to really enjoy this. There's tons of theory craft that you can do. It's just it's a really fun event. And it means that they still have a bunch of their resources focused on PoE2, which is, I think, the correct decision for them to be doing.
Yep.
But going back to that whole sort of thing with the mismanagement and you know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
That 3-minute video that Jonathan put out, it should have been like, you know, 3.26 is delayed, and it's delayed by more than we expected, but here's some cool events we've got lined up. That's what that video should have been. It shouldn't have been here's 3 minutes of Jonathan apologizing about the problem, and then after the weekend, after the backlash, they then come in and talk about the events, right? Like that should have been already a thing that they knew they were going to do, right, with the events, because it's just like you're appeasing that player base. Like, yes, it's quite kind of low effort, but it's good. It's a good solution.
Right, it is a good solution, as we've seen, right? The popularity is crazy. So I've discussed this a little bit with people and with Pox on the podcast. There had to be some sort of analysis that they did where they determined an event isn't going to be worth it, right? That must have been, because I think you and I may have talked about it a little bit, like that must have gone through their heads. Like, we could do an event, but people aren't going to like the event. Pox actually had a good idea that they looked at the numbers of the Necro Settlers event, and they just saw the numbers and were like, it's not worth it. Nobody wants to go back to PoE1. But it's just completely separate. Like, the mood around PoE1 at that time was very different. PoE2 was on the horizon. We're in a different landscape now where Path of Exile 2 has been out. People are yearning for PoE1. I wonder if they were just purely looking at the numbers and they're like, people don't want it. People don't want it. We're just going to put it all on PoE2 because, well, look at the numbers on PoE2. They're still in the, like, I think when they made that announcement, still like 200,000 plus a day, right? People are high on PoE2. And they were wrong. They were very wrong, especially for their most core fan base, right? Like, I did not like how a lot of people reacted. Been pretty vocal about that. I think it was an overreaction, but I understand why a lot of them reacted as they did, right? This is a game that a lot of people have played every 3 months degenerately, including myself, for like, you know, 6, 7, 8, 9 plus years. And now they're learning, for the first time ever, we're basically not going to be updating it at all, and we're putting all of our resources on something that you might hate, right? So I can understand the reaction, even if I disagree with it. And I'm glad that they reversed course. I didn't think they were going to. I thought they were going to go like, heads down, all right? Heads down. They're not going to look at anything. They're just going to work on PoE2. I was totally wrong.
After watching that 3-minute video, that's what I thought as well. Right. I thought that was pretty much it. I thought we weren't going to get any PoE1 or PoE2 stuff for, you know, a couple of months.
Yeah.
That was it.
So, I'm glad I was wrong. Good on GGG for reacting positively and doing this. And hopefully, here's the key, learning for the future, managing properly in the future. This is, I hope this is the rockiest time for both games, and I hope it's just up from here, honestly.
I also think that this event is quite a good thing for PoE1's future, because the way I actually see it is that, I mean, you can call me pessimist, you know, I don't actually see PoE1 ever going back to that like 3-4 month league cycle where we get like a sort of decent league every 3-4 months.
Not 3 months. Definitely not three, I don't think.
But I think this kind of event is actually something that they can utilize these sort of tools to make really interesting future content for PoE1 that isn't too like heavy in terms of like developer effort. Let's just say that here comes a new league, right? 3.27 at some point in the future. And they have all of these, they have the original ascendancies, and let's say they've done a balance pass on the new ascendancies that they made, and then they put all those ascendancies into like a random number generator, and that's you get three of those six ascendancies that you can choose from in that league. You can't pick the other three, right?
Oh, dude.
And that's like every time a league comes out, there's like, you don't know, like, you're going to make a bill, but suddenly that ascendancy's gone and there's some other ascendancies that you got to use. Like, what I'm saying is, like, that's really cool. And they're also adding those options as private league options, which is big, exactly. Mm-hmm. So I do think that kind of stuff is good for PoE1's future, because it's there's a lot of tools there. And as a lot of people have expressed, POE1's endgame is in a great place. It's in a very good state.
Are you sure about that, and Dreamcore? How about this idle system? You think that's going to be good, bad, meh?
Idle system's interesting. I know there was quite a lot of backlash on that. Like, I applaud them for trying new things in this type of event, because I think that's kind of... that's required to spice up the game a little bit, at least. And yeah, of course, people would love the Atlas tree, and I think I would also like the Atlas tree to be a thing in this event. But I think the idols might be quite fun. You might be able to just use one mechanic so much that it's ridiculous. So
to the moon.
Mm-hmm. I like that they try new things. Like, I think that's the same thing with the ascendancies. It's just so wacky that they're making 19 ascendancies. Right, that's something I would never have seen coming. So
yeah. Yeah, I'm really glad just that they are giving some love to POE1. I'm optimistic that everything will be good in the future. But if anything like this happens again with this whole POE2, POE1 scenario, I feel like people have learned that massive outrage does work against grinding gear games. That's like the only thing that I'm like a little... I don't know if it's... like, it's good, it's bad, okay? So obviously... the players should make their voices heard, but I still feel like the reaction was so like there was a clip of Ziz that went viral. Okay. Where he basically, it was like 10 seconds. He was like, it is crazy how a company that has built up 12, 13 years of goodwill suddenly becomes the worst gaming company ever because they mismanage something for like, you know, a year or something with expectations. And they say something over and over in development interviews and it becomes wrong, which I think the line is basically, oh, POE1 won't necessarily be affected by POE2. Like, I think that something along those lines constantly is repeated. Obviously, that wasn't true. And it does scare me a little bit that a lot of people that quickly can turn on a dime, you know? But I guess, is that just the nature of the internet that we have to deal with, I guess? I just feel like I'm spoiled by grinding gear games because I used to play Dota 2, Guild Wars 2, and the devs there are freaking silent. They don't say anything. Yep. And there's no consistency on any updates ever. And with Path of Exile 2, or Path of Exile, generally, I feel like finally, oh, this is good. So much communication. And even if it becomes less or more sporadic, I still know during that league cycle or whatever, there's going to be that communication. There's going to be a lot of talk, a lot of chatter, development interviews, all that. With the other games I've played, it's just like nothing, you know?
Yeah. You definitely prefer... I mean, when their communication is on point, it's good.
Yeah.
And there's obviously some... there's been some problems. Obviously, recently, like I said, that three-minute video shouldn't have really been a thing at all. Like, it should have been packaged a lot better. They could have done a lot more with that. And, you know, I agree with your point that the outrage kind of caused their reaction. Like, there was outrage over that weekend. I mean, there was like, what, 10 Reddit threads with like 5,000 plus upvotes each, all of them just the same kind of rhetoric, right? It was just, but it's, yes, there were a lot of disappointed people, and I think they're right to be disappointed, you know, after sort of 8 months of not getting anything and then realizing that this thing hasn't even been worked on at all, and it's going to be at least another 3 months, maybe more than that.
Did you like those? Were those good?
The Azaro meme was good, yeah. The multiplying Azaro was good.
And now he lives forever in the palms of PoE history, honestly.
Like, yeah, the multiplying Azaro was a good one. I think it was about to take over the Reddit, so GGG had to react to that one, dude, for sure.
I've seen somebody say like the ultimate meme is going to be if Azaro does multiply in the league, too. Like you face two Azaros in... the second lab, and then three Azaros or four Azaros or something. What if they do some meme like that? Would that be crazy?
I thought they were going to do something like that, because as soon as I saw the name, like Legacy of Freesia, I was like, they're going to be doing something with the lab shorty. Like, it's going to be some meme. But
and they did with the Ascendancies.
Yeah. Yeah, the Ascendancies are just crazy. Like, that is just more than anyone could have asked for, I think, for making builds and stuff. The only thing that would have made this event even better is if they just had someone look through the skills and just buff some of the really poor skills and nerf some of the top end, like, you know, just nerf Lightning Strike and like Molten Strike, the Zenith and stuff, and just, you know, buff some of the low end. But you can't get everything, so
buffing Cleave of Rage, how about that? Let's get back to those days, man. Affliction, I feel like that's gonna live as my favorite league of all time because Cleave of Rage was so stupid with the charms and everything.
that some of those leagues, like, in, it's crazy to actually look at sort of go back and look at the old leagues in like, you know, one after the other and stuff, and actually like compare what we got for each league and sort of discuss like what's the best league that I've played or that, you know, that's ever been released or something. But I really do think that some of the more recent ones that we had, and obviously when I say recent, I mean like last 2-3 years or so, have been like some of the best. Yeah. Like literally, like Settlers was amazing. Trial of the Ancestors is my personal favorite league of all time. Not really? So much. I mean, I liked the league mechanic, but it wasn't that. It was just that like tattoos were so fun for Buildcraft, right? They were just incredible for Buildcraft. And yeah, there's like Affliction was amazing. Sanctum was amazing. Like, yeah, you had some duds in there, right? We had Lake of Calandra, we had Crucible, we had Necropolis. It was really hit and miss there for a while. But when they hit big, like mm-hmm. really big. So it is kind of interesting to look at that and thinking like, I wonder how many people they actually had working on those leagues. Like the ones that done really well, you know, obviously Trial of the Ancestors, they took a bunch of stuff from PoE2, like assets, and reused them. They did that for Affliction as well. And that is, they should definitely be looking to do that more often, because if it makes the work easier for them, and it obviously does, then that is something that they should always be utilizing. But yeah, it's interesting to look at that, to see like, you know, how many people worked on those leagues when they were that good.
Yeah, I wonder if there are a few minds that just concoct these crazy mechanical ideas, and then they just steal the resources from PoE2 essentially. And there's just, I think, what was it, Sanctum that was released right before Exile Cut? No, it was Crucible, but before that was Sanctum. And I think they said that like one guy designed all of the Forbidden Sanctum, like all the Afflictions, all the rooms, and all that stuff. Like, I think they said it on stage. Just like props to that dude, because that system was great.
It's crazy.
That is crazy.
It's actually great. Like Sanctum has got to be, if you look at all of the leagues, right, Sanctum's got to be the one that just has the most crazy, like, in-depth league mechanic with all this crazy stuff going on. Like, it is actually just a game in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very well received. Very, very fun league. People love that league. So, I seem to remember, was it Balamage that went to ExileCon and he asked, yep. like, how many people worked on that? And I think originally something came out about 8 developers, but later that was like debunked, right? It was 20 or something, which mm-hmm. is still, you know, 20 devs making that league. All right, fair play. It was pretty good.
It is really good. And they had that awesome mid-league patch where they added the unique relics in.
I wish they did that more often. I really do wish they did that more often, because that it gave the feeling of the league being like alive and progressing as it went forward. They actually did a similar thing in Trial of the Ancestors. They added, I can't remember what tattoo it was. I think it was the journey tattoos of the body and stuff like that, right? Like mm-hmm. some tattoos they added like a week or two into the league. Like that is just, or was it the Keystone one? I think the Keystone tattoo came in like afterwards or something like that.
Late.
Like that sort of patch is so, so fun. Like they just, you feel like you've got everything and suddenly here's this like new thing coming in and it's not something small either. It's like, it's a big impactful thing. So,
oh yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Those relics. Oh, the no hit run thing, I feel like is the ultimate flex in Path of Exile 1 and 2 right now. That's like my aspiration. Like one day, if I can do that one day, I will be so proud of myself, but I just can't see it happen. I don't know if I have the patience, you know?
No hit is, especially in PoE2, actually brutal. Like, unless you're abusing some of those like buggy mechanics
mm-hmm.
that are in the game, yeah. like it's actually brutal. Like with no like instant blink movement skill type things and stuff like that. It's just, man, that is, it's hard. It's really hard.
Have you played at all with blinks in PoE2 yet, or have you stuck to just the dodge?
I did play with blink a little bit.
How's it feel?
It's all right. Yeah, it's all right. I had it on weapon swap. So you basically just like, you can like weapon swap and blink and then you can, you know, go back. But it's, yeah, it's all right. I mean, the dodge roll is an interesting mechanic, I think. I think they can play a lot into that. Especially, I think the dodge roll and basically a lot of the systems, like part of XR2's mechanics in terms of combat, really come into their own in a boss fight. Like, it's not so much in like mapping and stuff, because as we've seen, like everything just explodes.
Yeah.
And that obviously that's not always going to be a thing, or at least I hope it's not.
Me too.
But yeah, like boss fights is where those things really come into their own, where you can like ask something of a player and you can like, you know, here's something that you basically just shouldn't be tanking, right? You need to avoid this, and you cannot. A good example of that is the Arbiter fight, which has that one very difficult mechanic where he uses like the beam ability, and then there's also the circle, and you have to dodge roll into it at the right time. Yeah, so that those things are, I think that is them really showcasing in the boss fights how good they are at making those particular things, because you can go back and look at like we already knew it, right, with PoE1, how good the pinnacle boss fights really are in that game, and they don't have those kind of cool mechanics that they can rely on, like the dodge roll and things. They mm-hmm. just have to like make a really cool mechanical fight, which they did in several boss fights there. But yeah in PoE2 is pretty cool, I think, with those systems.
The circle and the beam dodging into it. For the longest time, I just couldn't do it. Failed. And then I got it once. And it all fell into place. It just clicked. Like, oh, that's how you do it. And I have not failed it since. I'm so proud of myself. Every single time, though, I'm like, oh, damn. Oh, here we go. And I succeed very easily. Like, it just takes getting it right a single time. And then everything always falls into place after that. Same with the dancing in the hallway thing. Like, you learn, yeah. Okay, the big thing that people make mistakes on is they will start moving as soon as, like, one hall fades away. Never start moving. Just stop moving and wait until you see the hall, and then you're going to make it every time. But if you move in the wrong direction or something when the next hall spawns, oh, dude, you dead. You dead.
That's how Gwyn died, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah. But what a fun little mechanic. I feel like most of the fights in Path of Exile 2 are... And I haven't played Dark Souls, but I've watched it, and it feels like most fights are inspired by Souls-like mechanics, very slow and, like, you know, okay, just dodging out of the way. And then Arbiter of Ash feels like an MMO raid boss fight, like Final Fantasy 14. That's what it's like. It feels like you're dancing with the Arbiter. Like, there are moves that you just have to move in this certain direction, this certain way, and you have to move at a certain time. And you're not necessarily dodging stuff. You are just literally moving. You're like following a sequence, right? I like that. I like that variety, and I'm looking forward to seeing more of that in the game.
Yeah, the Arbiter fight is cool, and I think Zesht fight is very good as well. It's quite clear that those two fights are the ones that they have designed and like put a lot of effort into actually really refining the mechanics of the encounter. And then you kind of look at the other boss fights, and I don't think they're quite up to the same level. Like the King in the Mist and Ulroth are not quite there, in my opinion. But yeah. The Zesht fight, especially, is just a work of art, man. Like,
it is.
Everything from entering the arena, the boss coming off the wall, like the music for. I don't know if you've actually like listened to that the track like from start to finish, but it's actually like a redone version of the Scourge. Mm-hmm. OST, which I think was actually a redone version of like an even older OST back from like, you know, Vow Sacrifice League or whatever.
I didn't know that.
Just actual magic, dude. Just so good. Mm-hmm. And just all of like that boss, a lot of its mechanics and stuff are just so cool. Like the way you have to interact with them is amazing. Like you know what you shouldn't be getting hit by, and everything in the fight feels fair. Which I think is how a boss fight should feel. Like, if you die to something that you should have avoided, it doesn't feel bad. You don't feel, like, angry at it. You just know that you shouldn't have got hit by it.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's something where they really, really did hit it right in PoE2. Because when you compare it to, like, the mapping, for example, where you do get one-shot by something and it doesn't feel
good.
Bad, right? Mm-hmm. But in bossing, it really doesn't feel like that. Like, you die in a boss fight and you're like, well, that was me. Like, that's on me.
My new rule for thumb, because I have listened to all the OSTs from Camille. Well, he's posted most of them now on his site. I sent him a DM on Twitter, and a month ago, and I was like, yo, I really want the Hunting Grounds OST. Could you post that? Dude, he has posted every OST besides the Hunting Grounds OST. And he told me, he's like, you know, I'm just not pleased with it yet. I'm making some alterations, but it's coming.
That's cool. So he's still making alterations to it, and I assume that will go into the game. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah, because all of them say early access version. Like, and he says final.
Yeah.
So he's just not pleased with it. I wonder if because that track, I love the Hunting Grounds into the Crowbell OST.
Yeah,
they're so good. I wonder if he feels like, because there were a lot of callbacks to Diablo 2 music for that particular track, I wonder if he feels like that is his, like, he wants to make sure that is peak before he posts it for the first time on YouTube and everything, and onto Spotify or whatever. But yeah, I'm yearning for that one.
For me, it's that Zesh, like, the Breach LST is just so, because I love the, for me, like, going, looking back at all of, like, the trailers and the OST and things, Scourge stands out for me. It's just like, man, it's just, it was so good. The trailer, the OST, just insane.
I like the little bell ringing or the ding, like, to open the whole, music for
Scourge. Yeah, with, like, the flashing on the trailer. Yeah, it's just, so it's so good.
Excellent. Yeah, the my favorite music track in PoE 2 right now, it's Count Geonor, man. Like,
that's incredible.
I like Zesht, but Count Geonor, it wins. I jammed that.
Yeah.
I jammed that hard.
The whole Count fight is incredible. Like, the poem that he recites when he's, like, jumping out of the fog, it just, yeah, that fight is just absolute magic. Like, if you, I think even if you compare it to, because I think the boss fights in the acts are very good. Like, Act 2 boss fight is good.
Mm-hmm.
The Act 3 boss fight is really, really cool. Like, very epic, right? The Doyani fight.
Yeah.
But the Act 1 boss fight, just, like, it can't be beaten by those two, in my opinion. It's just so good. Like, it's done so well.
Yeah. I think the coolest moment in all the boss fights, Act boss fights, is when Jamanra cuts the caravan into, like, that is such an epic moment when that happens. But yeah, Count Geonor, it just, the dialogue, right? I think the dialogue is so peak, especially the first time you fight him in the campaign when he's cursing Orianna and saying, "You wretched whore!" And he gets so pissed at her. And then the dichotomy between him and Jamanra, where Jamanra's like, "Go save the beast. I'll fend off this terrible person." Like, you know,
Count Geonor, my queen.
Yeah. It's so good. Oh my god. Oh, I want to know more about. I want the rest of the campaign, dude. I don't care about the end game. Give me the campaign.
See that? Do you know what? That's the crazy thing about that is that I went into PoE2 thinking, yeah, the campaign's going to be fun. Like, obviously, I already played it at the LA event. I knew that it's good quality and stuff. Thinking, oh yeah, I can't wait to get to endgame. But then after I've played the game now, I'm like, damn, I want to actually go back and play the campaign again and again and again, because, like, it's just that good, right? Like, playing on three on different characters, experiencing on different builds and stuff. Yeah, it's crazy. When the next three acts come, that's gonna be peak, dude. It's gonna be amazing.
It's gonna be a big day. Okay, another crazy thing to talk about, GGG development wise. Jonathan, my man. You're so funny. You're so funny, Jonathan. When he was speculating on the DM podcast, like, well, I don't know. Do we release all three acts at once? Or do we do one at a time? Do we do maybe two and then save the last one? Bro, you are in early acts. You got to have a plan. Come on, man. Come on. That's crazy that they're still, like, pondering.
I've actually noticed that quite a bit in the interviews. That is something that worries me slightly. Like, in the interviews, there's a lot of times where I'm, like, watching, like how he's some question comes in about some mechanic, and it's like there's no real clear direction there. It's like kind of directionless. Like, I mean,
I get it's a lot to juggle. I totally do. That's probably
insane for sure,
schedule.
Yeah.
But I am the mechanics. I'm a little more forgiving of. But something like an entire act, they're like, well, maybe we'll release it. Maybe not. Like,
I thought before Early Access launched, I was always under the impression that the way they would do it is a little bit like how they done the, I think it was the last fight. I mean, obviously, I wasn't playing PoE1 at that time. I don't think you were either.
No.
It's when they actually added the final five acts to PoE1. They kind of lumped them in one go, and that was the patch, right, along with something else. That's, I thought they were going to do the entirety of Early Access without having the acts in and then drop them right at the end as, like, the full release. But that just doesn't make any sense because they want all the feedback and testing, right? So the way I see it going now is that surely they're going to just add, like here's, I mean, we might even see, maybe we see Act 4 in 0.2 or maybe we see it in 0.3.
I don't know, but perhaps
they just drop an act. And then, you know, all that happens is, like, it wipes out the one cruel act that was replacing it. And then they just
the
try and get the feedback.
I think that's the best way to do it. I remember he was debating, like, oh, well, that that feels weird. And the story would, bro, I don't care how to get to, just drop me in the end game, okay? It's okay. The story can feel a little jank in early access. I think one act at a time is probably the right way to go about it, honestly.
Yeah.
So, and dude, remember in ExileCon 2023, you know, when we speculated that we were going to get a brand new Atlas system in PoE1 for Trial of Ancestors? Remember that? That was a fun podcast. Act 4 was like, it seemed like one of the most polished. That's the one they showed off. They were like, yeah, look.
Yeah,
Act
that's
4.
The one they show off very early, right? And we saw like all of the little mini teasers of the witch going through the place with all of the like zombified characters there. I guess a lot of those characters, like looking back on it now and seeing that teaser, like that was a lot of the characters they used from like Trial of the Ancestors, right? A lot of the Trial of the Ancestors like entities that were fighting in the mini game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of Trial of the Ancestors, that's going to be a trial, right? In Act 4.
What are they going to do?
I don't know what they'll do with that, but I mean, that I love Trial of the Ancestors, so I'm all in for that.
You think it's going to be at the auto battler tournament style, or do you think it's good? Which is kind of, okay, not to say it's brain dead Dream Corps, but compared to Trial of Sekhama and Trial of Chaos, you know, Trial of Chaos is more dungeony. Trial of Sekhama is like, oh, I can't get hit. I wonder if Trial of the Ancestors is going to be like, okay, this is just a battle and you get to move some chess pieces around a board, but it's mostly you just fighting, right? For those people who just want, like, I want to kill stuff, get my ascendancy, and that be it. I'm wondering if they're going to put it more in that vein and turn it into like a, maybe like a Coliseum style tournament or something, since it is a tournament, you know? I don't know. What do you think they'll do?
Yeah, I do think it will be, I think it probably will be the auto battle type thing, but it will be a very different version of it. Like, it won't be the version that we saw in PoE1. They'll have changed it so that it's like less, you know, with all the micromanagey, like buying units and things like that. I think they'll get rid of a lot of that stuff. So you just kind of organize your team and then you have to like go through, it might not even be 8, right? It might be like 4, but it's more, like you said, more of a large scale battle, less right. Like more of a big sort of grand fight that's going on, and you maybe have to then kill like different chieftains to ascend to then win the tournament.
Final boss, Hinakora?
Surely.
Surely, indeed.
Surely.
I hope so. Oh, yeah, man, okay. So just briefly, the whole ascending debate. What are your thoughts on the Trial of the Sekhama in particular? Right now in early access. I'll keep it as general as possible.
I like it.
And see where you go with it.
I like it. I think it's good.
Do you think it's too hard for like a first ascension?
No.
Based. Absolutely based.
I don't think any of them are too hard. I think they're all learning curve things.
Yeah.
All of them. Mm-hmm. And that's how they design them. They design them that they are, like, they're difficult. You go in, like, you got to remember that when they were talking about the boss fights in PoE2, they expect people to die 2 or 3 times before completing the boss. Like, that was their idea going into it, and that fact exists for those things as well, right? They have the bosses in there. Yes, the bosses in the Trial of the Sekhamas are not really, like, if you look at them in the scope of like just difficulty, that the first few floors are not difficult at all. Like, the bosses are very one-dimensional, but you know, the last boss is not. That's actually kind of a cool boss. If you don't know what you're doing in that boss, you are going to die to it several times before you complete it. If you're going in blind, right, you are absolutely going to die to that thing several times. So that's, but I don't know, like, I think that the things drop enough, like the tokens that you get, and I like that they wanted to make Ascension this thing where it's actually kind of difficult to get your last Ascension, and it feels very rewarding when you do get it, so I don't mind it too much.
I think we are the super minority, Dream Corps, because I totally agree with you. I think it's pretty much fine. The only thing that I think they should change are the minor afflictions that remove energy shield and evasion and everything to major afflictions. I feel, or like maybe it halves them instead of just completely removing your defense, because the devil's advocate approach too is just you avoid all random, right? There's very few times where you will be forced into that unless you're just picking random affliction, right?
Well, there's a lot of those things are all like, when I'm saying about how I feel about the thing, all of those things are all balanced things that I think will be fixed eventually. Like, for example, the thing that says you have no energy shield, that should be a major affliction.
Totally.
Like, it's way too impactful. Same with the evasion one, same with the armor one, right? All those things should be. So all of those things are balance issues. And this is also the same with the Trial of Chaos, where a lot of the modifiers are completely overtuned. And again, it's a balance thing.
Right.
Like, for example, some of them are completely free for most builds, and some of them are things that you never take on any build, right? So that's that's like that they just need to balance those things out. So
yeah, now I think there's just some fine tuning with the trials, and I think they'll be in a good place. The thrill of fighting Zarok, the floor four boss, for the first time, dude, and going in blind. Did you get booped? Because I got booped, dude.
Trying to remember now when I first did it. I think that I already knew about the fight. I don't believe I went in blind the first time. So okay. I think I killed it, and I was quite overprepared for the fight at that point.
Oh,
I think I had quite a bit of damage. That was on the Grenada. And that was, I think I killed it first time. I also had a ridiculous, I seem to remember I had insane boons in that run. Like, I was just extremely powerful. I had like movement speed, damage, like less monster life. Like, I just had, I had everything that I needed, right, to finish the run. And that is the thing that I think about that is kind of interesting, is that it is so RNG based with that whole like boon and affliction system.
Yeah.
And that, I actually think a lot of the frustrations with the system do come from that particular aspect of it, because the difference between going into that last boss fight and having good boons compared to having terrible afflictions, right, is literally night and day. You'll screwed, basically. Like, let's say you have the really, like, you're slowed down, right? You have really slow movement speed. You may not even be able to do that mechanic where he places like the things on the floor, like, and the clock spins around. You literally, like, if you can't do the mechanic, then that's it. Like, you can't do anything about it.
Over.
That's over. It's over at that point.
It would be beyond frustrating to try that and just see, like, only hit like three of them of the whatever, six or seven. I can imagine just slamming keyboard, keys fly everywhere, you're done, quit the game.
Yeah.
I see that happening.
Like, I actually had, I remember when I did this the second or third time on a character, I had the movement speed debuff, and I actually had to log out of that fight like four times. And eventually I just didn't do it, right?
Yeah.
Because like every time that he did that mechanic, I didn't have enough movement speed to get there. Even with shield charge and stuff, didn't have enough movement speed to actually get all of the things.
Right.
And then like, I just like logged out right before he killed me.
Yep.
But it's just, I don't know, like that is, I think a lot of the frustrations do come from that system, the boon and affliction system. It's not so much that the boss itself has like poor mechanics or, you know, it's really difficult. It's that the boons and afflictions have such a massive impact on your experience in there.
Yeah. Speaking to a lot of people who are brand new to Path of Exile, Path of Exile 2, I can confirm that, at least from my family and friends, like the boons and afflictions, especially if they don't necessarily understand how they work, you'd be surprised. It's a meme. You know, the Path of Exile players don't read. But also, new Path of Exile players also don't read, you know? And they're just like, what's happening? What's going on? Then they'll share the screen and they'll have like 10 afflictions and two boons. And I'm like, how do you have 10 afflictions? What's going on? Well, I was getting lots of sacred water, and I thought, no. Here's what you do. It's like, it's once again the knowledge sort of thing. Because if you have the knowledge, I swear, the amount of times you will fail due to the stacking afflictions or stuff, it's going to go very close to zero. I swear. If you have the knowledge of, this is the exact direction I go, I never risk random, I never do the trade-off. I at least never do like one boon, one affliction. Never do that, because that
I don't do that either. Because right now the balance is not correct. Like the upside versus downside is not there, right?
Yeah, super knowledge.
So it is definitely a knowledge based thing as well. I do think they could do a bit of a balance pass on the the boons and afflictions there.
I also think
that it's possible. I don't know if we'll see this in Path of Exile 2, but it's possible that they can have a system where you can choose which trial you want to do in Act 2. Like, I don't know I'm not sure if they would do this, because obviously the whole idea of the Trial of the Sekhmet is that it's like part of Act 2. It's actually part of the desert, right? Like, that's the thing. But it would be kind of interesting if you get the option to be able to do the Trial of the Chaos or even the Trial of the Ancestors, right, when it's available. That would be kind of crazy. And then like in Act 3, you can also choose which one you do. And then in Act 4, you can also choose which one you can do, like that. That would be interesting.
it would be a very, you know, let's say modern day ARPG choice. Like a Diablo, I could see that sort of thing happening in like Diablo or Last Epoch, where they're like, oh, you don't like this? Well, here, we give you these set of options, and it wouldn't fit into the theme of the game. They'd have to sacrifice that, but it would give players a lot more autonomy.
Like thematically, it would be a bit weird, but maybe they could do some like lore thing where it's like, yeah, you're trading off the coin, like the coin for the sacrifice, right? Ooh. for a silver coin or something, and you're like making, yep, that bargaining offer or something. I don't know, but
yeah, see, 5 seconds. That would be pretty cool. Core. Story team, get you to the story team of GGG. Let's go. Come on. You got this. I will say the boop of Zarok probably made for my favorite Quinn rip of all time, where he thought he paused the game.
I mean, one, like, I'm not sure. I guess he didn't know that you can't pause in, like, you know, Pinnacle Boss fights. So you just can't pause at all. But the trouble is, that is actually such a troll, because when you miss all those things and you have the pause menu up, you can't see the guy coming out of the ground and, like, doing the animation, right? And he's just dead. Like, that was just, oh my God. That was so funny, man. But it's also so sad.
It is. It's so sad. I didn't know you couldn't pause in Pinnacles until I saw that. It's the first time. I was like, oh, really?
I like that decision. However, when you try to pause in Pinnacles, it shouldn't bring up the full menu and say the game is paused. It should, like, what is that? It should say in red text, the game is not paused. Boom. And, like, obviously, you may want to get to, like, some of the menu, right? But it should say the game is not paused or something, right?
So, it's, there's so much early access jank. Like, there's another system. My friend, we were arguing about this last night. I said, when you hit maps, you are at -60% resistances, okay? That's it. There's no more extra in the tiers or anything. But in-game, there's still that information where it's like, when you hit tier 6 maps, you get another 10% penalty.
Yeah, they didn't change it.
They didn't change it, right? There's just all that early access jank in the game. And then there's shock doesn't appear on your skills. It only shows chill as ailments. I learned this the other day, and I was like, you got to be I thought I was going crazy. My friends told me, yeah, dude, you just have a skill. You just have like a mechanic in your build that's causing you to chill instead of shock. And I'm like, there's no way. I'm Tempest Flurry. I have no cold damage. This isn't happening. This is a bug.
There's so many bugs like that. Yeah, that's crazy.
You start to dive in, you know? So
yeah,
the extra polish and shine will come. Okay.
Yep.
We have been talking a lot about Path of Exile 1, Path of Exile 2. I want to ask you something, since it's upcoming in the next 2 months. Last Epoch second season. You still have not played Last Epoch, right?
I have not.
You have any interest in trying it out, or no?
Possibly. Yeah. Possibly. So, in terms of, like, for me, it's usually a thing, like, it's a commitment thing, right? Because those type of games, like, if I do kind of get into them, I'm then like, playing them a lot, and it's like, you know, I also want to play other things. Like, for example, Monster Hunter Wilds is coming out at the end of this month, and I'm going to be playing that with some friends. That's a really fun game. I played Worlds way back, like, 6 years ago, whenever that came out, with some friends, and that's just, I just love that game. It's great. It's such a different change of pace, right? It's very, very, very chill, and it's a really fun game. And also we got the POE1 event, which I'm not sure how long I'm going to be playing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have POE2 as well, which I assume. So I don't know if you've discussed this when you think the patch is going to be coming, but I think the whole reason why this event is 1 month is because the patch is literally coming like a week after the end of the event. And also I think that's why they're reluctant to extend the event. Is because they want the players to go back to POE2. This might be a bit of a weird thing to say. It might be like, but I want to just play POE1, right? There's going to be people like that. But I think they want to block that option off so that people do go back to POE2, because they want as many people as they can getting you know, feedback from POE2.
Right.
So that's kind of what I expect. So I do expect that in 1 month's time, we're going to get like information for like a release date for 0.2. Like, I think it's going to be, if I had to guess a date, it's probably going to be like middle of April release date, I think.
Oh, for POE2's 0.2 patch?
Wow. Maybe the end of first week of April.
Dude, you know when Last Epoch season comes out? The first week of April.
The first week, yeah. That's, dude, that I actually said that. I was chatting to a friend, and I said, like, I immediately saw that like release date for Last Epoch, and I was like, POE 2 are just going to try and crush them. And they're going to go head to head with them.
Brutal, because they have put obviously they haven't done a patch in almost a year. They have been putting so much work into this season and getting themselves in a good place to actually do a more cyclical cycle sort of thing. Wow, that was stupid. Anyway, I originally predicted that Path of Exile 2's patch would come out like middle of right now. I predicted, I think it would come out on like Valentine's Day. That was before they came out with the DM Ghazi chat. And then I saw like, there's no way. They're still, you know, they're in a little bit of a haze from Christmas, and the game's on fire, as Jonathan said in that video. Like, they are trying to fix a whole bunch of things, change a whole bunch of things, and add new content into the game. I think they are fixing and changing far more than they anticipated. I think they thought the game was in like a better place, right? Balance wise and design wise, than they found out after, you know, 570,000 plus players entered the game. And now they're trying to do all those things at once, and they're needing to extend it out. So my new guess, I don't think they'll do that to Last Epoch. I don't think they'll try to smash Last Epoch into the ground. So I'm looking at my calendar here. I think that it will come out. Here's the big prediction. So the event ends. Is it March 20th, I believe? I bet it comes out March 21st. Bam. Boom. Predicted. March 21st.
What date is the Last Epoch patch?
April 2nd. So that gives a week for, you know... You think it will be after the Last Epoch? I don't know.
Dude, I think they're going to drop it on April 4th.
Just
completely crush Last Epoch.
Dude, that would be the... That would be so bad. Oh, I'd feel so bad for the EHG guys. I mean, because even if this is a banger of a season and patch for them, everyone's going to go try out the Druid, the Huntress, you know, the new end game that they're going to put a coat of paint on and stuff like that. The Sheen, maybe Act 4. You know, I hope that's not the case. At least if they're going to do it after, hopefully a buffer. So like April 11th. But then, dude, that's too long. I feel like that's too long. And I know my opinion is let them cook, but I feel like they have a timer on their cooking right now.
I agree that it's too long. Like I mean, you already know that I said that they should just be patching anyway. I don't think they should be waiting for big updates to patch. But it is too long. But I'm also not really convinced. Like you said, there's a lot of stuff. They want to put so much stuff into this. They want to fix all the balance. They want to fix so many of the bugs and things like that. They want to add a bunch of new content. They possibly even want to add a new axe, new classes. That is just a ton of stuff. And they're trying to obviously ship it all together in one big patch, which means that all of these things have got to be ready all at the same time.
If you're right on April 5th, oh my God. EHG will not be happy. I will tell you that. They will be very, very sad. So,
it's just business, right? At the end of the day, also, my guess is GDG wanted to launch 0.2 earlier, but if we've learned anything from POE 2 so far with its release cadence, it's that every time Jonathan says a date for something, it's going to be like double that. Right, or something. Like, it's going to end up being way more than that. So when we thought that we were going to be getting, like, every 3 months a big patch, it might end up being four or 4.5 months, right, until we actually get that big patch. So that's kind of why I expect it to be April, you know, sort of like early April, early to mid-April.
All right. Early to mid-April, let's go. I do hope it's not March 21st, because that's the day before my daughter's birthday. And I will not be able to blast that weekend, because we're going to be having many birthday parties. So, GGG, don't follow through on my prediction. Please don't do that. All right. Dream Corp, I have started a new little segment that I call Rapid Fire, okay? Named after the terrible crossbow skill in Path of Exile 2, okay? Or is it Rapid Shot? I don't even know. I really wanted that to be good. I feel like it's not good, though. It sucks. Yeah. I wanted to be able to... But crossbows in general. Grenades?
Crossbows are quite janky at the moment.
Yeah, but grenades. Grenades look good for the most part. So I haven't tried them, though. I'll have to give it a go.
You gotta
try. Okay. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions in rapid succession. The goal is for the answers to be short and succinct to give you as little time to think as possible. We'll see if that actually pans out. Last time it didn't really pan out. We're going to try it again though, okay? you ready?
Sure.
All right. Trial of the Sekhma, Trial of Chaos, or the Labyrinth for Ascension? Which one do you prefer?
Jeez.
Yeah, it's Lab. Also, it's Lab. Like, obviously, I'll keep the answer short, but I just love Izaro. I love the music of that place. Like, the voice lines. It's just got such an incredible feel. So, surely they should put the Lab into PoE2, dude, and just, like, give it a massive facelift. Like, it would just be incredible. Can you imagine that? Like,
the final ascension point,
basically,
eventually.
Now that they know what the Lab's like, yeah, exactly, and just make it really cool, man. Just make it just a really, really cool thing.
They have all
that experience to pour into it, so.
The ruins of the Lab, and maybe there's, like, maybe an engineer goes down, like an engineer necromancer goes down and resurrects Izaro into some, like, crazy, mixes him together with his pet. What's his pet's name? Shoot. Crap.
Yeah.
Is it? Killed him so many times. Uh-oh. This is bad. Chat, help me out.
Argus,
yes. Mixes him with Argus. Oh, dude. Yeah. That'd be good. That turned out to be really long. Okay. Arbiter of Ash, good boss design or bad boss design?
Good for what they intended. Not good with the current balance.
Okay. Best weapon currently in Path of Exile 2?
I mean, a well-crafted staff.
Well-crafted staff, okay. Jankiest weapon playstyle currently in Path of Exile 2?
Mace.
Okay. Favorite Path of Exile 1 skill ever?
Righteous Fire.
Wow. Okay. Act 1, Act 2, or Act 3 in Path of Exile 2? Which is your favorite?
1.
Path of Exile 2 campaign versus Path of Exile 1 campaign?
Yeah,
first 3 acts. Path of Exile 2, you said?
First 3 acts, yeah. Not cruel, right. but first 3 acts.
Limited Atlas endgame system in Path of Exile 1 or the unlimited Atlas system in Path of Exile 2?
AoE1, Atlas system.
AoE1, okay. The current endgame system of Path of Exile 1 with limited watchstones or voidstones or Ritual Era where you had 64 watchstones? Which one did you like better?
Current.
Current, okay. Favorite Path of Exile 1 pinnacle boss currently?
Maven.
Oh, yes. Let's go. Hard agree on that, man. Maven's so good. So good. If you could transport one Path of Exile, one Pinnacle Boss into PB2, which would it be? With the caveat that it's PoE2-ified, so like they up the ante, right? Maybe they give it some new abilities.
I'm going to go with Uber Elder for that one.
Ooh.
Uber Elder. I think that would just be epic.
Ooh, that'd be so good. Okay. Most weapon you are most excited to see in Path of Exile 2?
Man, that's a hard one.
There's a lot of them left, dude. I forgot about claws. Claws are still a thing, too. If you go down onto PvP,
I would say Moroya Urki, but like maces are just... I don't know, dude. Like, do you want a mace that attacks even slower than current mace skills?
What did you say? Which weapon?
Morohi Urki.
Oh.
I'll go with that.
Okay. Unique that you think would be awesome in Path of Exile 2 from Path of Exile 1 that's not currently in the game.
Oh, that's what I thought the question was. Did you mean weapon type?
Weapon type, but that's fine.
Oh, weapon type. Okay, yeah, flails, definitely. Flails.
Okay, flails. Yeah. And then unique that you want to see in PoE2, even unique, slower yeah. mace. That's what you want to see.
Moroi Urki, if they fix the mace skills, yeah.
Giant bonk. Okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah. One NPC in Path of Exile 1 that you are sorely missing in Path of Exile 2.
I do like Kirak.
What?
I do like Kirak. I like. Do you know what I really like about Kirak? I like his voice line about the Harbingers.
Yeah, all the blue guys. Dude, I was just in this place. I fought because he has voice lines about the Harbingers with the memory and just with the mission, right?
Yeah. I'll go with Kerak. I think his voice lines are great.
Blue bastards. Okay. All right. Wow, that's a new NPC. That's one of the newest NPCs added. It's already endured on you.
Yeah.
That's crazy to think that Kerak is new. Wow.
That is crazy to think of, yeah.
2021, right? Or no, did he come in with Conquerors and Baron? He did.
He was already in the game. Yeah, he was already in the game. Obviously, he took over Zana's role in your hideout, like setting maps and stuff.
Yeah.
When they added Exarch and Aether.
Right.
Wow. 317, yeah.
6 years, almost 6 years of freaking Kerak. Wow, I feel really old, man. I feel really old. That's crazy. Okay.
Yeah.
Last question. Which League mechanic from Path of Exile 1 are you most excited to see in Path of Exile 2 at some point in the future?
Now, that is an interesting question.
Yeah, that's big.
I think the interesting thing about that is, like, how will it look in PoE 2?
Right.
You know, Blight is an interesting one, because I wonder whether they'll just have this full redesign of it, and it'll just be... Because I always thought that Blight as like a tower defense would be really cool in PoE if it wasn't for the fact that it should just be all about the towers, right? Like that's kind of the whole idea of it. Mm-hmm. And I really like that keystone's a thing on the Atlas tree that you can actually spec into.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go with Blight because I'd just be so interested to see how they would do it in that game.
All right, DM will be very happy with you. Very nice. Very good. Okay. Well, man, I mean, this was super fun. Was there anything else you wanted to chat about, Path of Exile 2 or Legacy of Freesia related that we didn't touch on?
I think we covered a lot of it. We covered a lot of ground there on both games.
Yeah, we did a pretty good job. Well, yeah. We will have to, maybe when point 2 rolls around, Silver will be ready and we'll have to get the three of us together. I've got a 3-panel version of this ready to go for us and only us. So, yeah, I'm ready for it. All right, man. Well, it's been awesome. I'm probably going to play a little bit more hardcore and then probably go see my kids because they're probably wondering where daddy is on Sunday because daddy's usually with them all day on Sunday. All right, man. Well, thank you so much for chatting.
Right.
I'll talk awesome later. Awesome chat, okay?
Yep.
All right. See ya. Go check out Dreamcore on YouTube where you are popping off with the sentences. We better see some crazy build ideas come to fruition on your channel.
Some
next
crazy builds,
month.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be good. Scavenger.
I did. Nice speaking to you.
All right. See you, Dreamcorp. Have a good one.
Peace.